You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the second in a series of three podcasts on endometriosis hosted by Med Learning Group titled Clinical Pearls, Providing a Timely Diagnosis of Endometriosis and Effective Management of Endometriosis-Associated Pain. This series is aimed at obstetrician-gynecologists and other healthcare professionals involved in the care and treatment of patients with endometriosis. My name is Cindy Lampner, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll explore therapeutic strategies for patients with endometriosis. Joining me again is Dr. Hugh Taylor. Dr. Taylor is Anita O'Keefe Young Professor and Chair, Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences at Yale School of Medicine, and Chief of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Yale New Haven Hospital. He's also Professor of Molecular, Cellular, and Developmental Biology at Yale University. Dr. Taylor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Cindy.
Can you give us a rundown of the various medical therapies used to mitigate the pain associated with endometriosis?
Well, we have several different therapies that we use today. All of them are hormonal. Endometriosis, as we know, is a hormonally responsive disease. We either give progestins to slow down and the growth of endometriosis and cause that endometriosis to decidualize and atrophy. We lower estrogen levels, which are the main driving force behind endometriosis growth, or we can give androgen derivatives, which also inhibit estrogen production and directly affect the growth of endometriosis. Most common medication that we start with are typically oral contraceptives. It's the progestin component of the oral contraceptive that's effective. We can also give progestins themselves, either medroxyprogesterone or norethindrone or a progestin-containing intrauterine system. In other parts of the world, they'll use agents like Dynagest, a progestin that we don't have available in the United States. In addition to progestins, again, we can use something like danazol, which has a mild androgen component to it, is also effective treatment, but has side effects which are often troubling to patients. And we can use estrogen-lowering agents that we'll get into in more detail later on in these podcasts, but GnRH agonists and more recently antagonists are very effective treatments for endometriosis.
What are some of the factors that need to be considered when deciding which treatments to use when initiating therapy in a patient with endometriosis?
Well, oral contraceptives are usually the first-line therapy. They're inexpensive. Patients are generally familiar with them and very comfortable with them. But they're not the most effective therapy. There's a fairly high failure rate with oral contraceptives. Not only that, sometimes they can cause mood disorders. Patients often will have bloating, depression, or irritability. So they're not always the best therapy for endometriosis, but most commonly used initially. Second-line therapies are typically danazol, which is rarely used because of the acne and potential for hair growth associated with it. Not popular with patients, although effective. And then we'll go on to the GnRH antagonists, typically as the most common second-line therapy.
What are the limitations of current treatment approaches? Are all patients well-served by available therapeutic options?
Well, unfortunately, as we discussed a minute ago, oral contraceptives are the first line, but they're not the most effective treatment for endometriosis. They're inexpensive, and often that's why they'll be used as a first try. But somebody who's had significant side effects from an oral contraceptive in the past, certainly anybody with depression or irritability, bloating, breast tenderness, I would go immediately to GnRH antagonist. Additionally, those with very severe pain might be better served going to a second-line therapy such as the GnRH antagonist rather than an oral contraceptive. Higher doses of progestin can be sometimes effective because endometriosis can be resistant to progestin. So very high doses can sometimes be more effective, but often will produce worse side effects. So high doses of progestin alone, not incorporated into an oral contraceptive, norethindrone or medroxyprogesterone acetate, can sometimes be effective when an oral contraceptive is not. However, they are generally associated with worse side effects. So somebody who has side effects from an oral contraceptive, that's not an appropriate therapy. We know that progestins sometimes fail because of progestin resistance. They have low progestin receptors, and any progestin you give them won't work or won't work well. So switching from one birth control pill to another is never the answer. When the pain persists on a birth control pill, it is because they have low progestin receptors, progestin resistance. They won't respond to any progestin, and it's time to move on to a second line therapy. Again, second line therapies, the danazol is not popular because of the androgenic side effects. I rarely use that medication today. More commonly, we move on to the GnRH antagonists today, which are very effective medications that have a very favorable side effect profile.
How does the mechanism of GnRH antagonists differ from the mechanism of action of GnRH agonists?
Well, the GnRH agonists are what we used in the past before we had the antagonists. The mechanism is quite different. The GnRH agonists initially stimulate the GnRH receptor. The GnRH receptor in the pituitary gland regulates FSH production and estradiol production through the ovary. When the GnRH receptor is initially stimulated with the agonist, you get an increase in FSH, an increase in estrogen production, the so-called flare effect. There can be a worsening of symptoms before that turns around. With continued stimulation, the receptor becomes desensitized and downregulated and no longer responds to the GnRH, so essentially shuts down that receptor. And you do get a profound low estrogen level. This, again, is an all or nothing effect. You have to fully stimulate the receptor to get that full down regulation. So there's no titration, there's no in between, either stimulation or complete down regulation to an estrogen level that's fairly close to zero. So the agonists are injectable medications and give you that complete suppression. The GnRH antagonists are quite different in that they can immediately block the receptor. So you don't get that initial outpouring of FSH, you don't get that flare effect, you don't get exacerbation of disease before suppression. You can get an immediate suppression. And you can also titrate that dose so that you can get a partial suppression without the profound, complete suppression you would get with an agonist. It gives you much more flexibility and a very different means of controlling estrogen production in a way that isn't all or nothing. Gives you control over how to dose that medication and much more immediate response that we didn't see with the old-fashioned agonists.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of GnRH antagonists versus GnRH agonists, particularly in women who have been recently diagnosed?
Well, we went through some. Based on the mechanism of action, again, the GnRH antagonist starts to work immediately. You can get reduction of estradiol levels within 24 to 48 hours, whereas it's a week or two with the GnRH agonist. There's that initial stimulation that can make disease worse. Probably one of the things that's most popular with patients is the GnRH antagonists are oral, whereas the GnRH agonists are injectable. So it's much easier, much more patient-friendly. They work rapidly. And they also can be reversed rapidly. The GnRH antagonists, you can stop taking them and within a day or two, estrogen levels will start to come back again. So patients feel very comfortable, especially when they're first initiating therapy, that if they don't like that medication, they can rapidly reverse it, as opposed to the old-fashioned injectable agonists where that would be in your system for months after that initial injection. So they're oral, they work rapidly, they're easily reversible. Somebody who might want to consider becoming pregnant in the near future, these are much better choice for those patients as well. So there are multiple advantages to the GnRH antagonist over the agonist. Also, not quite that extreme reduction that you get with the GnRH agonist. The antagonist can give you a milder suppression of estradiol. Patients are much more comfortable, and they get rapid onset of action. They don't have to get an injection. It's oral, produces these agents produce an estrogen level that keeps the patient much more comfortable than the old-fashioned GnRH agonists. I tend to use GnRH antagonists anytime an oral contraceptive has failed, or for those patients of mine who've had adverse reactions to oral contraceptives in the past, or who have very severe pain where I want to get complete control without concern for failure immediately. I use the GnRH antagonist in those patients.
Well, thank you, Dr. Taylor. This wraps up the second podcast in our series. And thanks to all the learners who have joined us. Please tune into our final podcast, where we'll be discussing the results from clinical trials of endometriosis therapies and their implications for treatment. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I'd like to give a special thank you to Pfizer and Myovant Sciences, Inc., who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.